This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Malola Lee and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs. It's the place we sit down with a Nijan footy player and get to know their story through family and footy. And of course, we'll have some fun too. And they get control of the speaker. My name is Sam Wykes. And with me each week is my Cook Island Koi, Tinidar Arona T.
Kia ora, Sammy. It's been a cool change up to go deep on some athlete stories like Joe Ngalavel, Mal Kawa, Will Hopoate, and more. You can catch up with them too if you missed it via the Nijan Footy podcast or the ABC Pacific website. And today, Sammy, we have one of our regulars on Nijan Footy. We do have it every Friday, but I think it's a great opportunity to go deeper in her journey. And it's our women's rugby league expert, Sala Tonga Tuki. She has represented NRLW for the Sydney Roosters and the West Tigers. She has played 8 games for New South Wales in the State of Origin and also represented the Fetu Samoa in 2019. And last year, she won the Pacific Championships representing Australia. Welcome, Sala Tonga Tuki, to Summer Sit-Downs.
Thanks, guys. Been watching and following this for a while, and I've had some cool stories in that on board. So I'm very lucky and privileged and honoured in that just to be on here and get to share my story a bit deeper this time. So
beautiful.
Yeah, thanks to you, Sammy.
Well, let's dive straight in. Speak about your family. Whereabouts in Samoa is your family from?
So my mum's from Sakalo Falealili. Also a bit of a family comes from Falealakai. And my dad's a city boy. So he comes from Lelumoenga, Nofualii, which is right in town. So mum's village is pretty much all the way in the outback, like very far. It's like two to three hour drive sometimes, depending. Obviously, it's all one lanes and out there. No traffic, whatever. But, yeah, sometimes the roads aren't safe to go to where mum's village is. So,
do you know how your mum and dad met? Living so far away from each other?
Yeah, actually, Dad happened to be in New Zealand with his older sister. She's trying to do his paperwork for him to obviously migrate. And Mum happened to be in New Zealand at the same time. And Mum said that she was mowing the lawns. And my dad apparently was just walking and he just saw this chick, like, mowing the lawn. And he had the audacity to, obviously my mum's there staying with her uncles and that. And my dad's rocked up to the front door, like probably a couple of like days later, and he's just knocking, and he's just asking, didn't even know her name, whatever. He was just asking, you know, is a lady that was doing the mowing the lawn here. And my uncle and I was like confused because they didn't even know my mum did it. She just went and did it. And yeah, no, pretty much I went from there. Just asked her out on a date.
Your dad, eh? So yeah. Was it mowing the lawn that caught his eye? I like
pretty
it.
Much, yeah. That's what I got told. Just yeah.
So the love language must be acts of service.
Is that what he likes? Is that what you got from that seat? Yeah. Fair enough.
Yep. I reckon.
I tell you, must be a staunch fella, your dad, just to be able to walk straight up there, knowing that there's brothers out the front, off the bat, ready to go. He's like, "You're not dating my sister. Who the hell are you?"
No, seriously. He's pretty ballsy. But you're right. Hit the nail on the head there. My dad's actually very he doesn't show emotions, my dad. Yeah, and even like when like a couple of things have surprised him with, it's just hard to break him. You just don't. Even when when my older brother passed away, during the whole like morning I didn't cut him say probably fresh now here. But yeah, during that process my dad didn't even shed a tea. And until the on the burial day, he had just a bit of tea's not streamy. And then yeah, I guess he has his own way of dealing with emotions and that. And it's probably something that I find very, very common with our people who only know what they know growing up in the islands. Like, they don't get the services and the help that they probably need there, like, to be able to express. Or I think the culture is very heavy there. That the elder, it's very, like, the hierarchies and that. You can't say much, doesn't matter what age you are. If you're in this position, your chief or where the title hails from, you just got to show respect there to those people. So, and my dad's quite heavily involved with the chief stuff. So I guess, yeah, that's something I've figured out with my old man, that he's just not an emotional person. But even with my footy games, like all my grand final appearances, obviously I've lost a couple of them. I'd be walking over, you know, trying to find comfort in my family that, you know, teared up. You'd think my dad would hug me and cuddle me and, oh, it's all right. No, my dad's like, why are you crying? I was like, don't cry. And I'm like, what? Straight tease goes sideways. I was like, all right, I like just have to, yeah, be yourself again.
Well, it sounds like, yeah, the old school. You can't so change them. School. So it just sounds like that stereotypical type of old school Islander man showing no emotion and giving you absolute nothing, and then they cry over, you know, when they have their grandkids. So that's what usually happens with those 100%. Ones.
There was actually one moment where, a special moment actually over Christmas, which I'm sure we'll touch on shortly, where I think that you broke your father, but we'll save that.
We'll save that one. But well, let's just, you talked about your parents here. Let's talk about your childhood and what it was like growing up in your household and around your connection to Samoan culture and living in Western Sydney.
Yeah, so I was born in Auburn, and then my family, you know, made the move to Lethbridge Park, which is a suburb within the Mount Druitt Council or district. And then pretty much, yeah, we only lived there for a couple of years. And then, yeah, we pretty much just spent most of our time living in Tregee. So we moved from Lethbridge Park to Tregee, good old Tregee Hill there. A lot of nightmares. If you know, you know. But, yeah, I am one of six siblings. We adopted four kids from the islands. So then pretty much I'm one of ten now. How I stay connected with my culture, being Samoan, was pretty much my church. So I am a Christian, but I do go to a Samoan church, which is the Efakasa. And, yeah, there is a church in Edmonton, if you know. It's pretty quite known, so everyone will just know, oh, where's that? And then you just pretty much reference that church. Everyone knows, oh, yep, I know that church. But, yeah, the church I'm currently at right now is the Colleton Efakasa. My dad's pretty much a secretary there, but he also helps preach the word if the priest and that can't really, you know, do it himself. So my dad was on a weekend that just went by, my dad led the service, and all my siblings and that went, and it was just nice for my family and that to come together. My mum, yeah, she's always been an Efakasa person. But yeah, all it is, it's just really, it's I feel like most of the times that we do all of our after church stuff more the Samoan way. We even do Sunday schools, and it's all just spoken in Samoan and that. And you learn even the what you call the Ngangana Samoa. It's different tongue, a language that's spoken in Samoan. It's more like you can understand how the chiefs and that speak as well. It's a different kind of dialogue that they speak. I'm grateful. If it wasn't for my mum and dad like bringing us, obviously a lot of us were forced to go to church. But I think one thing I took away from the church growing up was how to speak our language and that. And I think I'm grateful for it. Even like when I go to trainings or any teams I go play with in Oztag or go to the gyms or wherever I am, you will hear me say something of someone like I might be like that new to me. They might hear it and they'd be like, oh my God, like, yeah, she's someone. That was my whole purpose of getting the band around my thigh too. My whole life growing up, people mistaken me as an Aboriginal person or a Tongan person. It's for me, I'd always be like, oh, no, I'm someone. Like, so when I got the band, like literally that was just easy for them to look at the patterns and I'd be like, yeah, you're someone. And I didn't get asked anymore after that. Even going back into where my partner's from, he's from a very small country town, and people there will just straight away know that looking at my band, it's, yeah, she's someone. And that. For me, it's just more identity. I didn't get it scripted to tell a story, my band. It was just more for my identity and just to know that, let the public know that this is my belonging and my connection to my identity being a Samoan woman. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
We'll claim you being Tongan, though. We'll take you if you want to come over.
What? I was thinking more Cook Island.
I was the only Samoan in my origin camp. I was the only Samoan, I think, in the origin camp for a bit. And it was only T, Samoa, Yasmin Clydesdale. Yeah, pretty much I just went down. But I just love the South Pacific. Like, I love, you know, the Polynesian cultures that we all got to uplift each other, and that's me. I'm I'll definitely, you know, think, yeah, sweet tongue, like tea gang up. So yeah, honestly, I love it. So.
Hey, and shout out to Colleton Ifakasa. It's one thing I love about our people, and when they, you know, they're growing up in the church, that they carry a lot of those values throughout their life, and whether it's in sport or in work, they still, you know, it's who they are.
Yeah.
When was the last time you actually went back there to visit your family?
I'm in 2019. Sorry, I got it tattooed on me.
Oh, yeah, is that what you were checking for? I thought there was a disconnection with the internet.
Yeah. Oh, man, George's connection, you know. Sorry.
Well, you have to check a tattoo the last time that you went back home?
Yeah, because, man, it's been a while. I guess it was just because it was my first time in Samoa. I said I didn't want to forget it, but just in case, you know, you might come across too many head knocks. So then, sorry, no, but can't be joking about that.
I was about to say, well,
that's why I got my last name tattooed on my back. So just in case, I forget. Oh, so it was a special time, 2019, back there, first time. What did it mean to you?
Motherland. Oh, it meant heaps. Didn't know how crazy our people were about the whole footy thing, eh? Even though the grounds were, like, just mud. Our people were still, like, the stadium was packed out. It was stadium packed out. You just had all the villagers and that people just surrounding the fields and that, just yelling. Like no other, I'm hearing our people just watch you play. But I think it's more so seeing my whole village, like, my mum's village being so far, and all the games were held in town. They made an effort to all come down and watch. I think for me, and like, we don't have, you know, big cars or buses and that to get everyone out. So just the effort that they all made to come in little cars and that just to be there, very, very special. And to meet, you know, finally put faces face to face with some names and that I've always known growing up. And also just being in Samoa, it was just good to also just see it's humbling, to be honest. Just like, because for me, like, I know that it's not just myself, but a lot of Samoan households, it's a lot of giving money back to, you know, support the village, support the families there because of, you know, your parents, siblings are still there looking after the village and that. But, yeah, it was just very humbling. I didn't get to go see my dad's village at all, very unfortunate, because we were there for a week just in camp and they didn't allow us to have any of downtime or off time, and I didn't even know how to get around Samoa properly. Like, you know, I know in Rarotonga you've got scooters now, you can get around the island quite faster, but I'm pretty sure in Samoa there's no such thing as scooters. So yeah, I didn't have a license at the time as well, like a full license to be able to drive in Samoa. But hey, I know now in the islands you don't need a license, you just need money and you just need to butter up the bloody police officer.
Just need some tala, eh?
Yeah, some tala. Hey, that's sweet.
How did it feel as a girl being born in Australia and grew up here in Western Sydney, but then going back into your motherland in Samoa and in your early 20s after, you know, such a long period, how did it feel to be able to go back but also still be connected to that Samoan culture, you know, speaking fluent Samoan, you know, knowing the Ifakasa way that your mum and dad taught you? How did it feel to have that connection still and, you know, not even being on the land for a long time?
Yeah, I feel very proud. Just even like as soon as I got like to Samoa and, you know, saw what I saw, just experienced everything there, especially I think it was a perfect timing for me as well, being in a camp for a week. We learned like Samoan songs. We did a lot of locals and that, our prayers and that, you know, when we woke up and went to bed. Just little things like that. I think that's what kept me connected. Like, even though I was away from family and I felt like I had family there.
Well, we've heard about some of the values and that your mum and dad have instilled into you and your siblings. What do you think is your greatest lesson? We'll start with your mum, that you've learned from your mother, and then we'll go to your father.
Just respect and listen.
Respect and listen.
Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're in the wrong or right. And doesn't matter what position you sit in or sitting on, and like you just got to be respectful in that, or those around you. Just very humbling. Like my mum, she's not someone who asks for a lot, and she's always willing to put others first before herself, always. And something I've probably taken, like I'm trying to take after, But yeah, definitely, yeah, just respect and listen.
And your dad?
Yeah. My dad, just hard work. Just hard work. I think that's any Polynesian father figure in that. It's just hard work. And our generation are very lucky to have witnessed that in the upbringing. It's probably taught us to not take things for granted a lot more in life. And even like the values that we take away from that, the sacrifice, it's definitely do not take anything for granted, but it's more so like just respect the sacrifice as well. Like for me, it's like I don't want to put all the effort to vain what they did. It's not a small thing. Us kids could have been like, you know, living in New Zealand if they didn't try to, you know, come to Australia. And we know that Australia has a lot more opportunities here.
Hey, you mentioned earlier about your brother, the passing of your brother. Yeah, well, how much of an impact did that have on your family when you went through that, being such a big family?
Yeah, to be honest, everyone was grieving their own way. And in our family, like, we weren't really great with communication. That was just it, like, general, like, just growing up, we weren't good at talking or opening up about our feelings. And I guess that obviously stemmed from our parents. Like, they were just straight, yeah, do this, do that, do that. It was never a time where they showed it's, you know, you can express. And it's probably why I touched on my dad. He's just a very, like, non-emotional person. Hard to break, hard to understand sometimes, but his actions speak a lot louder than his words, and he's very loving and he's done a lot for us. So it's a bit of a funny thing. Like, I know, not a funny thing, like, obviously with my brother passing, but just how it's brought my whole family together. As sad as it is, but it's like, it's something that we just now look at each other and like really treat, like, you know, every day with each other like it's our last. Yeah, with my brother's passing, it's just so hard. Like, it was very hard for our family. Like, it was very tough. It came like unexpected. Like, and the way it happened, it was just, we had questions like for it. And all we could do was pretty much like, we didn't get as many answers as we would have loved to, but all we could do was just try and live the way he would have wanted us to. And my brother did pass away in prison, and he sent a lot of letters to us. We miss him heaps. Like, we, from time to time, we've all got our own letters from him, and we revisit those letters. And most of the letters that my brother sent, oh my gosh, I'm going to cry. I said I won't cry on this, but most of the letters that he would send to us were just goal settings, just things that he wanted us to achieve or as a family. And having the house and having my mum and dad live a better life, like, his dream was to come out. And my dad, in a tricky house, my dad had he built something illegally, he shouldn't have built, but it was like a garage my dad tried to build at the back of the house. And it was where my brother had pretty much bedroomed in. And he told them, "Mom, Dad, I'm gonna come out of jail, and I'm gonna start up my own tattoo business. I'll start it from that little shed that my dad's built. And, you know, I reckon I can make." He had a lot of belief, my brother, and it's something I envied of him. Someone that only knew was stuck in four walls and could still have that vision and dream. Like, and I know that there's so many now of our people that are in jail that you see them come out and you just see them do wonders. You just see them change a lot in our community. And I knew my brother, if he was alive, I definitely know my brother would have been a big thing, like, around him. And I think for me especially, I'm just trying to make those dreams come true. The house for my parents, them to live well before their last days and out here and, like, whenever that is. But, yeah, that was something my brother, like, I just miss him so much because he gave, everyone had their own connection, like, their relationship with him. And for me, he was sort of like my safe space. Like, if I couldn't open up or confront my parents, like, that I didn't want to do this or that. Because I was that kid in my family, like, my mum sent me off to live with a family of hers for 2 years of my high school, and it was felt like it was pretty much boarding school. And they just wanted me to really do good in school. I was that hopeful kid for them to, you know, go get a really good job, hopefully work somewhere that's going to buy them a house or whatever it was, you know. And footy was definitely not an option in their eyes for me, like especially my dad. He bagged me out a couple of times, so, oh, no, no, no way, no. And they would just say, no, you go straight to work and you make sure you come home. We go church stuff right after. Or we, Tyler just doing the chores around here, like just, you know, those cup of teas like we touched on earlier. I just, yeah, that's – everyone had their own way of wanting to bring my brother's vision, his dreams to come true, and it's something that's helped us grieve, like sort of go through it. Mourning – I can't even say it, I still – the process and that – and yeah, we just, yeah, he's been like, everything's happened how it's happened. And yeah, I just wish my brother was around to see it, because I definitely know he's smiling down and he'd be so happy if he was here. So yeah.
First of all, I just want to say thank you for sharing, you know, that moment and that story. And and second of all, I know that your brother will be smiling down and very, very proud of everything that you're doing, man. And the journey that you've taken on, and, you know, living some of those dreams that he had and providing for your mum and dad. And which leads me to one of my favorite moments over Christmas was seeing you, you know, gift your father a new car, and seeing the emotions that your father went through about that, you know, that gift. Is that something that you've always wanted to do, you know, provide your mum and dad with a house and a car?
Yeah, the house was definitely the goal. Like, that was always there. It was always my intention to want to do. If it wasn't through footy, it would definitely be like through work and that. That would have been the first thing for me with the house. But my dad's car, I wasn't in a position ever, like, especially after the house. As soon as I seen, yeah, I know there's a saying, you don't realize until you've got the mortgage over you, like what debt you're sitting in. And I was just looking at that, the destination I was just looking at was just get the house. I wasn't even looking at the things after that and what I had to, the responsibilities you got to deal with after. But holy, the last 2 years of dealing with this mortgage, yeah, I wasn't in a position to, yeah, I can definitely go get your car, Dad. He's been hounding me for a long time.
So he planted the seed. He planted the seed with you.
I feel like he did a little bit.
Hey, they planted seed when they sent you to their school for 2 years.
My dad, he doesn't have emotions. So how my dad tends, we've noticed he communicates, is he'll make jokes. He'll think he's funny with the jokes, but it's probably dry. And we know that, yeah, this guy's not joking.
But there's truth behind those jokes.
Yeah, there's truth, hey, for real. But yeah, his many of his jokes are around the car.
Give us an example. What was it? What would he say?
Oh, he'll just talk about someone's car, like, oh, that's a very nice car, hey. Like, and I'd be like, yeah. And he'd be like, oh, yeah. My friend's got this similar car like that. And I'm just like, what's your friend got to do with like us just looking at a car in like random public? I just knew it was little like comments, like underlying comments like that. I knew there was a bit of truth behind it. You're right, T. And I guess like as soon as I was in a position, and I knew, and I'm thankful to God, like the way I was able to play all those rep games last year, that helped, you know, a little extra money in the pocket. And I was going to be selfish and go and invest it into, you know, something that could obviously make money for me, because nowadays it's just not cheap. And no, as soon as I got my dad given to me as my Secret Santa, I was like, holy, like, what do you reckon? Like, I was just telling myself, like, what do you reckon? Like, let's do this car. And shout out to Chris Newman from Sports Galaxy. They do a lot of finance broker stuff in it, and he had a really good connection with the dealership in Castle Hill. So, yeah, so I was lucky enough to go meet the guys at Castle Hill dealership and LDV, and Manny is his name. He is a big Parramatta supporter, so that wasn't a great deal for me because I play for West Tigers. So, yeah, thanks. Yeah, no discount there, but that's fine. And, look, he was awesome.
Hey, if you see sell out Parramatta next year, you know why. That's for sure.
If I re-sign, RJ.
Did your,
love West Tigers.
Did your dad say anything to you off the camera?
Oh, bro, my dad was just I've never seen the joy that he had, like, compared to the house. Like, it just hit different. I guess it's a boys thing. I don't know what it was, but he was so happy. Like, it, and it really brought a lot of joy to my heart to know that. I'm glad I did that.
Hey, how far back did you have to plan your Secret Santa? Because, you know, our Secret Santa, yeah, you get a month's notice, but, mate, to save up 30, 40 grand for a car, like, you would have, surely you would have had to know at the beginning of the year.
And how filthy were all the other siblings that your dad got a car and they probably got a box of chocolates?
No, yeah, I think they were jumping on your boat too, saying that I'm going to be your Secret Santa the next year.
That's the one.
I think you gave my siblings an idea for next year.
I think your dad actually made you his Secret Santa.
Yeah, there's chess behind it. Yeah, there's chess behind
the seeds. Absolutely. And he's like, Sulla's going to be more.
He didn't know it was coming at all, to be honest with him. Like, my sister had Christmas games going for the family, and it was dragging because obviously we had to go do a lot of things and that with the car just to make sure before I bring it home to him. And yeah, he started getting the shits. And the worst thing about it was my sister had to use his church ties to blindfold him. And he was like, oh, for the game, sorry, the blindfold game she had. And he was just getting like crappier than my, why are you using my church ties? Like, blah, blah. But he honestly, like, everything church, like his clothes to him, it's like very sacred to my dad because he now preaches the word of God, and he just doesn't like anything that he uses for it to be traveled, like played with. And then my sister just had to break that one rule of his, and it was sort of all worth it for him because he was like, everyone just gave him like, the ones that were playing the game with him, they're like, oh, see, Papa, like the grandkids, they're like, see, it was worth us playing of your church time. Like you say, you know, you pray to God and like you do things and that, blessings come down. They were just being very cheeky to him, and he just had a lot of smiles that evening.
But, yeah. I do appreciate you sharing that video, and I know that you inspired a lot of our people because the thing I love about you is that you go and get it done. You know, a lot of us, we probably say that word, love to go and buy my mum and dad a house or a car, but to see you actually go and do it and for you to share that moment, I know it inspired a lot of people.
You're listening to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs, and this week we're joined by NRLW star Sulla Tongatuki. Let's get into your footy journey now. You mentioned before your dad would, what did you say, laugh at you or something for playing footy earlier, but how did you get into the sport of rugby league?
So my background's just all netball, and that was the only sport my dad would be okay with. And why I say he would be okay with is because it was a struggle to even get me to play netball. My uncle did some convincing. My dad, mum wouldn't pay anything to it. So my uncle had to pay my registrations for netball so I could go and play. My uncle saw potential and we went with it. My first year I did end up making Penrith, and I ended up just playing for Penrith and in all their reps and that growing up. And lucky enough that I was very, could have been a Swift, but that's when I sort of made the decision to be very cheeky and come over and play the game of rugby league. So, yeah, it all started, it was like when my older brother passed away. And, like, I don't take anything lightly, like, since his passing. Like I said, like, before, I, you know, want to try and make his vision and dreams come true, but one thing that he instilled in me was belief in my own vision, my own dreams and what I was interested in. And my very last core memory of being with my brother was a visit. I told him that, you know, he asked me how's netball, and I obviously told him, you know, it's been crazy, like, you know, being able to travel to some like places in our Sydney backyard. Like, you know, my brother, I told him that, and then I said, I don't really want to play anymore, Junior. And he said, well, why don't you go play, like, footy or something? I don't know. Like, because that's all he knew. Like, that's the only sport he knew growing up himself. He played a bit himself. And he just said, sis, go play. Like, I don't know, find someone. And I was like, because at the time, too, there was no girls' teams going. There wasn't much advertised. So I was telling, like, obviously I'm speaking no confidence to him. Like, oh, I don't know. And he's just like, you just never know. Like, if you see it, go. And just crazy, like, I was on Facebook and that, you know, obviously, like, just when he passed away and I was just really going through a tough time, everyone was in my family, I didn't know how to deal with it. And I just everyone was on their phones, didn't know how to talk. I obviously was on the phone on Facebook and I was just scrolling, and a cousin of mine, Lelavi, Leo Little, honestly one of the players I thought was going to play in ROW, but she ended up just coaching, coach and play, because there wasn't any volunteers to coach the girls' team for Glenmore Park Brumbies. And she was like, put it out there. And then I reached out and said, I would love to give this a go. I just don't know how to get to trainings. And she happened to have her license. And she came and picked me up. I'm not encouraging this to kids. Be honest. If you are interested in something, you want to go for it, be honest and open with your parents. But for me at the time, I had to lie to my parents. And they thought I was going to, like, my netball trainings. If not that, because they happened to come to the church at the time as well. So I said we were going to do some Bible studies and that. And I'm so sorry, God. I still say sorry to this day. I honestly do not say anything in God's name. Like, I feel really bad to this day. But, yeah, I
the car makes up for it. Don't worry about it.
It was your purpose. House,
the car.
They won't be regretting your misbehavior. It was your heart calling you.
No, but seriously, what Bible study? You could have used anything else, but you had to go there for your excuse.
And what about?
Oh, wow.
Wait, if you're going to Bible studies, how did you come home with no dirt on your knees or covered up in training sweat?
Most times my parents wouldn't be home when I'd get home. They'd be with their church stuff. And like I said, they're very busy bodies with church. And that's like first thing they put. Like everything in life they do is God's first for them. So, yeah.
And where would you leave the footy boots?
Oh, bro, they would be in my backpack. Like it was so yuck. Look, it was nasty.
Yeah, the smell in there.
Ooh. No, it would be in there. Or sometimes I'd leave it with Lullaby, and I'd just say, I'd always wash them too. I'd make sure I'd wash them and that, and yeah, just do whatever it took to, you know, hide it away.
And what about coming up to your first game for the Brumbies? Did you tell your parents before then, or did you just go and play?
No, I just went and played. I think I fell in love. No, honestly, I fell in love with the game. I'm just learning it. And shout out to one of the NRW girls, Shaylee Bent, her dad, Paul Bent. He was also assisting at the time. And I think it's in the women's game now, like, man, I give credit to a lot of the males that have jumped on, who have made time to share their experiences and that, because that's what's helping the game grow.
Yep.
And at the time, Paul Bent was one of those very few men who came and gave their time to the game, and he taught me and it made me really fall in love with it fast. And then, like, it was like I was out of the whole fee thing, like, because I was still scared, like, going to trainings and, you know, like, what if they know? But, yeah, as soon as I, like, you know, learnt the game and that, I was nervous but confident to go play my first game, and I just loved it since.
What did you love about the game?
Well, one thing was scoring a try. I was like, just how you had to work hard to get to the try line. Being, you just thought you were the man, like, because you were running, like, around big people, just people you thought were very, like, you know, just going to smash and dominate you. And, but yeah, no, I loved what I loved about the game the most is we all know this is the friendships you get out of it. I still talk to all the girls that I first played my first game with, to see their support and where I am now from back then to now. It's unreal. Like, just, you know, we could have not been speaking now. So I don't take it lightly, the friendships I've made out of footy from then to now.
And what was the moment like when you had to tell your mum and dad about you playing rugby league and for a long time before they even found out?
I was crying. Like, I got a hiding.
What?
I got a hiding. It was on my first grand final. That's when I found out.
They didn't find out till your first grand final.
Yeah, my first grand final.
So how many games would have been there before you grand final?
Oh, a season.
I'd say like around like 11 or 12. Like,
plus so you hit it for that. You hit it for about 12 weeks.
Yeah, no, for real. I haven't gone down memory lane in a long time. So it's pretty funny now to talk about it. It wasn't funny at the time. But yeah, no, I got a hiding because my mum had her Sunday school stuff on. And around the time grand finals are held for junior rugby league, it's around similar, like, you know, October. Sunday, well, back then, yeah. It's on a Sunday around in October, September.
So you had to tell them because you had church commitments on at the same time?
I didn't tell them because my parents were looking for me, because my mum, especially, she was my Sunday school teacher and she had a skit.
Oh, so you weren't there?
at summer school. There, so my mum had to read it.
You skipped Sunday school.
No, even worse, she missed the skit, the play that they were doing.
The play, yeah. They call it White Sunday.
Anna was a White Sunday play.
It's a White Sunday. If you know your,
I wonder why you had to buy a house and a car.
And your mum had to read your script.
Yeah, my mum had to just read it out for me because obviously I wasn't there, just so the storyline flowed. So yeah, then they were asking where I was, and remember my cousins that went to the same church, and the parents happened, one of the parents happened to be there, and they were just saying, oh, they're playing the grand final, and it was at that Colleton's home ground, actually.
Oh, Ridge Park, yeah. So it wasn't far from church.
They were saying, yeah, like the parents told my parents, and my parents obviously got the address. They came straight away. They watched, you know, the ending, and we lost, and I was trying to take it in that, well, I was very, like, young. I was, you know,
losing the first grand final and then walking off and then seeing your mum and dad, and then your heart just drops.
What's that feeling like when you've lost and you're sad, and then you see them there and they're watching, and it's White Sunday.
And my heart dropped. No, you had it right. My heart dropped. I don't know. I was in my head. I was like, do I run? Do I start running? Like, do I? I don't know. But yeah, no. My dad would catch me if I started running. He still had it a bit then. So my mum, though, my mum calmed my dad down. My mum tried to make him understand. So thankfully, yeah. But I got a hiding from them. My dad.
Everyone or like at home.
Oh yeah, I got they bored me, they hit me from the back, and they were like, well, what? Like they were saying Samoa, they were like, oh, like little shit, like how do you think you come out to these things, and on a Sunday especially, you know, God, it's God's resting. Like they were just giving it to me, and I didn't want to go home. We were like literally nearly at the car. My dad, like, they're still hitting me. Sorry, this is no child abuse. This is just how we know how it was all dealt with back then, but. I didn't want to go home because I knew it would have got a worse beating. So I asked Lullaby. I was like, any chance I could come over and, make up some excuse. And my parents, they never say no when it comes to these things. They just, I guess it was like one of, yeah, like they asked, and I went and ended up I escaped a bigger hiding, and I went and spent it with my cousins. But even worse, my cousins and their dad made them go wash, hang up the washing. It was just a lot of washing. And also you had to pick the dried washing. And mind you, it's not my undies, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there because my uncle's giving his kids lectures left, right. And you know how it's awkward? Like you're that kid that's so awkward. You're just sitting there and you're like, all right, I should have just went home. But because I'm sitting there quiet, my uncle turned around, you get up, you go do it too, do the washing. And I was like, this is not even my clothes. I'm touching your guys' undies. We still laugh, hey, me and the girls.
Skipped the hiding and then you had to go and clean someone else's undies. You had to go clean
someone else's, it was just not it.
When you look at your footy journey and from that game, and your parents being very disappointed, you fast forward to your NRLW debut. Now, what was that day like? And in comparison to that grand final day,
it's chalk and cheese, surely.
My dad wasn't quite on board yet. Surprisingly, even though it was NRLW, he wasn't quite on board. He sort of used the games because most of the games back then were all doubleheaders, so he kind of used my games as a way to go to the men's games. Like, it wasn't more to support me. I knew I didn't quite have his respect and full support of this dream of mine. Like I said, he's a very non-emotional person, so I just knew though. So then only when I made my first State of Origin appearance, that's when my dad jumped on board. Like, he was at my first grand final for NRLW, like my first debut season. We happened to make the grand final, and my dad was there. He was supportive and everything, but I just knew he wasn't. How I know that my dad's not on board, it's when we're at dinner, wherever we are together, just me and us. He doesn't talk anything footy to me. It's always about feminine like stuff, you know, anything to do on that with women, like, you know, oh, the jobs, and I think you'd be good going to do this, like office works. So I knew my dad didn't see what I saw in rugby league. And yes, the money may not have been big at the start, you know, but it's crazy where it's at now, and it's still expanding quite, yeah. It's rapid, hey, the growth.
So did the conversation between you and your father change after your State of Origin game?
Massive, yeah. It changed, and man, God like works wonders, bro. Like, I'm telling you, like, dinner, like, everywhere we go, just me and him, he's always talking about footy now. I can't stop talking about it.
Yes.
He's always asking, how's your trainings? When's your next training? And that, like, and then he'll always, when he does shopping for groceries, like, my dad never used to do this, but he would always make sure he goes, gets Gatorades, like, water bottles, little things that he knows that I love to have, hand, like, just on hand, and that to get, be able to be ready to go wherever. With my trainings and that. So, yeah, like when you look at the contrast of things from what, probably only like 4 or 5 years ago to where we are now, and he sees, because the vision, the belief I saw my dad give to my brothers, I was like very jealous of that.
Yes.
I wanted that for myself. Like, I know that he may not have been okay with, you know, netball as well, but I wanted what my dad was giving, the attention he was giving to my brothers, the sacrifices he would do just for them to have footy boots and that. Yeah, he may not have to worry about that now, but I think he doesn't realise when I was going through all that and trying to, you know, break, like, the stereotype, like, just the barriers and that within our culture and just with how he was with me.
You're listening to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs, and this week we're joined by a member of our Nijin footy family. She's represented New South Wales in State of Origin, Samoa and Australia on international level, and we're going to talk about that right now. Fetu Samoa, what was that experience like for you, Sala Tongatuki?
Oh, it was the best. We were lucky that I had some girls, obviously the Afakasi, and they were able to kind of represent that side of their heritage and that. And these were girls that I just looked up to. I was growing up playing any, like, I played some local sports, and I'm just seeing some of these girls come over and play for Samoa, represent. Coolest experience. I'm pretty sure my first campaign for Fetu Samoa was in the Nines. I think it was a championship they had in Brisbane. Just I think one thing I took away from it was the war cry. Just before games kicked off, you'd have to do your war cry, and we did the Fetu thing for Samoa, and I was very emotional because I would straight away in my head, I would think about my parents and even like the ancestors and that, their sacrifice and that.
Yes.
Just all that stuff, it just came to my mind. And yeah, I think every time you put on that blue jersey for Samoa, you're not only playing for yourself, but you're playing for your family, your people. And yeah, just a culture.
Were you right at the front? Were you the spearhead?
I was not at the front. I'd love to. I was with them.
Did you get that feeling of like the spirits just come in you, and then all of a sudden you've been taken over, and then you're like, oh,
yeah,
my ancestors inside me. Yeah, I'm unstoppable.
No, for real. Oh, see, that's how you feel, Adrian.
All the time.
Oh, I love that. Nah, a lot of pride and joy. Doing a war cry, first time learning it as well, and yeah, I'll never forget it. Definitely, I loved putting on that jersey for the tour, and I did speak with Sally after that. They'd done an awesome job getting the girls to qualify
for
the World Cup. So yeah, who knows? Might see myself in that blue jersey. I'll probably work hard for it. It's not given. Just gotta work hard for it.
Oh, there you go. There's a little scoop there. Could be something different this year.
Might not be this year. Yeah, like we just never know. Like, World Cup's next year. It's a long way. The following, it is next year. We'd say next year. 2026.
Well, let me remind you, the team you play for this year is the team you have to play for the World Cup. No,
that's correct.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, that is correct. Yep. So, yeah, it's only fair and right.
Yeah.
True. Like, there's so many good players that are coming through.
Well, let's get you to Vegas first.
Get there. Oh yeah, Vegas. See what happens.
Oh,
but you finished the 2023 season, you know, needing ankle surgery and a bit of a disappointment end to that season. But you finished last season Pacific champions, playing for the Jewelaroos. What was that like? What was that experience like, putting on that gold jersey and representing Australia at the PAC Champs?
We all know playing for the Jewelers, the Australia team, is like the pinnacle of the game. It is the highest honour you could probably receive. Just as for me, and growing up, that's always what us girls just saw. Obviously, yeah. And when I got the phone call and to be able to put that jersey on, like, it's been a dream I've been longing for to come true. Obviously, the ankle surgery and that delayed me from, you know, putting it on. But yeah, man, I just made sure I never looked back again and made every moment count going forward. And that's all I'm trying to do now. Like, you're not getting any younger. We probably forget that we're inspiring every second, every minute. Whether if you boys are in a studio, whether you're out and about, people know who we are. And whatever you do, you just want to do things like 100%. That's something I took for granted before the ankle. Everything happens for a reason, and there's just some lessons that come out of it too, the unfortunate ones. And I was one of the unfortunate ones with the injury. But one thing I took out of it was just don't take your time off. Like, for me, like now, I'm enjoying my training. I'm loving every bit of, you know, pre-season that, because I used to hate, everyone hates pre-season. But that time when I was injured, like, man, that was probably the worst. Like, that's probably, I hate that more. Like, just sitting on a lounge and watching everyone train through my phone, the screens, like, I honestly hated it. Like, and I said, I don't ever want to feel like that again. So seeing now, like, I've been hearing people saying too, like, I've been crossing paths the last couple of weeks, man, you've been running heaps. Like, man, you're training a lot. Like, and I don't need to, like, obviously explain why I'm doing what I'm doing. I just do it, like, because that's my own behind, like, my head. Like, it's just, don't take it for granted anymore. If you can move, you move. Like, and for me, I've just been, like, loving pushing other people around me. Like, if I can, like, I've been seeing my sister. She's on a health journey. My other sister's also on that.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much for joining us on our summer sit down. We really appreciate you, the work that you do. You're an inspiration, and I love how you're just straight up. You're a straight shooter, and we look forward to seeing what you achieve this year in the NRLW space, but also off field. So much love.
And hopefully we see you in Vegas.
And every Friday.
Viva Las Vegas. And every Friday after that.
Every Friday after that.
Much love, guys. Thank you so much.
Take care. Cheers.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.